Vision too. Slowly, arms untangled, legs unsnarled. Slowly, Chris stuttered out his news. Flora Baumbach felt so guilty about seeing their dropped clue that she told him one of her clues. Mountain.
But we must tell Turtle.
Don't worry, the intern said, displaying a bruised shin. Chris laughed, then stopped.
Sorry.
Mountain. Denton Deer thought about the new clue. If a treasure is hidden in a grain shed on a mountain plain, I sure don't have time to look for it, do you? Let's forget the clues. I have something more important to tell you. Don't get excited, okay? Chris nodded. His partner was going to ask for the money. Denton Deer stood. I'll get your toothbrush and pajamas. Then we'll go to the hospital. Don't get excited. Chris got excited. How could he explain that what he wanted from his partner was companionship, not more probing, pricking doctors with their bad news that made his mother cry? Listen, Chris, can you hear me? Just overnight, I found a neurologist, a nerve doctor, who works on problems like yours.
Operation?
No operation. Did you hear me, Chris? No operation. The doctor thinks a new medicine may help, but he has to examine you, make some tests. I have your parents' permission, but no one will touch you unless we talk it over first. You and me. Together. I promise. Chris grimaced, trying to smile. His partner said, talk it over. The two of them. Together. They were really partners now.
You can have money.
What? Oh, the money. Later. Here, let me take those. You won't need them in the hospital. Chris clung to his binoculars. Well, I guess you do need them. Ready? Here we go. All of a sudden, he was leaving Sunset Towers, pushed by his limping partner. Maybe Dr. Deer is not who and what he says he is. Maybe he is being kidnapped for ransom. Maybe he's being held hostage. Oh boy, he hasn't had so much fun in years. Chapter 19. Odd Relatives. Thursday was a sunny day, a glorious day. The autumn air was crisp and clear. None of the heirs noticed. WPP crossed the tape at $44. $44.50. $46. $46 a share. Oh my.
Don't sell until I give the word, Baba, Alice Turtle had said.
Baba. The dressmaker smiled at her new name and eased back in the chair, but not for long. WPP, 48¼. Oh my, oh my. Flora Baumbach bit her thumbnail to the quick. If only the child was here. The child was being examined by the school nurse, having been caught again with a radio plugged in her ear. Turtle blamed her misbehavior on a toothache.
The only thing that soothes the horrendous pain is listening to music.
You should see a dentist, the nurse said.
I have an appointment next week, Turtle lied. Can I go home now? The pain is truly unbearable.
No.
The nurse packed the tooth with foul-tasting cotton and sent her back to class. So every half hour, Turtle had to ask permission to go to the lavatory in order to keep up with the latest stock market reports.
Bladder infection, she explained.
Crow polished Mrs. Wexler's silver teapot with a Westing disposable diaper for the third time. 2 more days. The day after next. It was too painful going back to that house, but Otis said she must, to collect her due. It was her penance to go back, not her due. Blessed is he who expects nothing.
Boom! Just a warning to keep doors locked, the delivery boy said, dumping a carton of Westing paper products on the kitchen floor. You know, Crow, old pal, I think I figured out who the bomber is.
Crow stiffened as she stared at her distorted reflection in the shining silver.
Who?
That's right, Otis Amber said. James Shin Hu. He wanted to put the coffee shop out of business, right? Then he had to bomb his own restaurant so nobody would suspect him, right? And he catered the Wexler party. Nobody would notice if the caterer brought an extra box along with the food, right?
James Shin Hu was the bomber. Crow's hands trembled, her face blotched with hate.
That beautiful, innocent angel reborn. Sandy said her face will be scarred for life. James Shin Hu, beware. Vengeance shall be mine.
The judge rearranged her docket in order to have these last days free. Leave it to Sam Westing to interfere with her work. Sandy turned to his next entry.
It's an interesting one. Crow. Bertha Erica Crow. Age 57. Mother died at childbirth. Raised by father, deceased. Education, 1 year of high school. Married at 16. Divorced at 40. Ex-husband's name, Windy Windklopple. Hospital records, problems related to chronic alcoholism. Police record, 3 arrests for vagrancy. Gave up drinking when she took up religion. Started the Good Salvation Soup Kitchen on Skid Row. Works as cleaning woman in Sunset Towers. Lives in maid's apartment on 4th floor. Westing connection? Question mark.
Yes, it is interesting, Judge Ford replied. But it hardly tells us what we want to know.
You've got a customer.
Jake Wexler pointed a spare rib at the black-clad figure standing at the restaurant door.
Must be a bill collector, Hu said, frowning over his account book.
Grace looked up, saw it was only the cleaning woman, and returned to the sports photographs she was sorting. A dozen or more superstars would be framed and hung on one wall of Who's On First.
Come on over and join us, Jake shouted.
Limping to their table, Crow heard Mrs. Wexler click her tongue. Sinful woman. She'll go to hell with her pride and her covetousness and take that foot butcher of a husband with her. And that one, the fat one, the glutton, the bomber, the mutilator of innocent children. Maybe she is a customer, Hu thought, recognizing the face clenched in righteous anger as that of a diner not being served fast enough. He rose and pulled out a chair for Crow.
My wife will be serving a Chinese tea lunch shortly.
Madam Hu placed a variety of dumplings on the table, giggled at Jake, and ran back to the kitchen. That tittering Madam Hu was a beautiful woman, and quite young. Grace, casting a suspicious eye on her husband, was suddenly seized by a surge of gnawing jealousy. Maybe it was just the fried dumpling. Madam Hu returned to pour the tea. Jake patted her hand. Good, Grace noted. She's clutching her stomach. About time she felt jealous. The podiatrist turned his smile to Crow.
Nothing wrong with your appetite, I'm happy to see.
Nothing is wrong with my mouth, the cleaning woman replied, looking down at her plate. It's my feet that hurt. That corn you cut out didn't heal yet. I got a callus on the sole of my left foot, and my ingrown toenail is growing in again.
Grace clasped a hand over her mouth and ran out of the restaurant. Mr. Hu headed for the kitchen.
Your trouble comes from years of wearing the wrong kind of shoes, Jake lectured.
Crow wasn't listening. James Shin Hu, the bomber, was coming back. He had something in his hand.
Here, Crow, try these. I invented them myself. Paper inner soles. They'll make you feel like you're floating on air. It's tough standing on your feet all day. Here, take them.
Crow examined the two pads of spongy folded paper.
How much?
Nothing. Compliments of the house.
Still suspicious, Crow slipped the inner soles into her shoes and tried walking. What a blessed relief. Otis Amber was wrong. James Shin Hu was a charitable man. He couldn't be the bomber. Crow floated out of the restaurant without paying for her lunch.
Oh, no, not another victim, Sidell Pulaski cried, stuffing her notes under the mattress. The nurse wheeled Chris next to Angela's bed and explained that the boy was being tested for a new medication.
"Are you all right?"
she asked, bending over the squirming patient. Chris was trying to remove a blank, sealed envelope from his bathrobe pocket. He knew his brother had a crush on Angela. He figured Theo must have sneaked upstairs in the wrong bathrobe to slip this letter under Angela's door, then remembered she was in the hospital and was too shy to give it to her in person.
"Look at that smile," Sidell exclaimed. "From Theo," he said.
Chris hoped to watch Angela read the love letter, but the nurse insisted he return to his room.
"Bye-bye. Good luck,"
Sidell called. Angela waved a bandaged hand.
"Mountain,"
Chris replied.
"From Turtle.
Serves her right for kicking his partner." Mountain, Angela thought. Turtle's MT stood for mountain, not empty. And the letter was not from Theo. "Your love has two. Here are two for you. Take her away from this sin and hate now, before it is too late." Again, two clues were taped at the bottom. "With Majesties." "Crow and Otis Amber's clues are not king and queen," she told Sidell. "They are with thy beautiful majesties." Sandy and the judge were still at work on the heirs.
"Wexler. Jake Wexler, age 45, podiatrist, graduated from Marquette, married 22 years, has two daughters, see below. Grace Windsor Wexler, born Gracie Windkloppel, age 42, married to above, claims to be an interior decorator, spends most of her time in the Chinese restaurant or the beauty parlor. She and Jake, see above, have two daughters. See below. Angela Wexler, age 20, engaged to marry D. Denton Deere, also an heir. 1 year college, high grades, victim of third bombing, embroiders a lot. Turtle Wexler, real name Tabitha Ruth Wexler, age 13, junior high school student, plays the stock market. Smart kid, but kicks people. Flora Baumbach calls her Alice. Westing connection. Grace Windsor Wexler claims that Sam Westing is her real uncle. Angela looks like Violet Westing. So does Grace in a way, except she's older.
Sandy fidgeted with his pen.
There's something I didn't write down. Maybe I shouldn't tell you, you being a judge and all, but, well, Jake Wexler, he's a bookie.
No, he should not have told her.
A small-time operator, I'm sure, Mr. McSouthers, the judge replied coldly. It can have no bearing on the matter before us. Sam Westing manipulated people, cheated workers, bribed officials, stole ideas. But Sam Westing never smoked or drank or placed a bet. Give me a bookie any day over such a fine, upstanding, clean-living man.
The doorman's face reddened. He pulled the dented flask from his hip pocket and downed several swigs. She had been too harsh.
Would you like me to fix you a drink, Mr. McSouthers? No thanks, Judge. I prefer my good old scotch. Windkloppel!
The judge's outburst was so unexpected, Sandy had a hard time keeping down the last swig.
Grace Wexler's maiden name is not Windsor, it's Windkloppel!
The judge exclaimed, rifling through the pages of Sandy's notebook.
Here it is. Bertha Erica Crow, ex-husband's name, Windy Windkloppel.
Sandy stopped coughing, started laughing.
Grace Windsor Wexler is related to somebody, all right. She's related to the cleaning woman. Think she knows, Judge? I doubt it. Besides, we cannot be certain of the relationship. I'd like to see the documents in Crow's folder again. I'm sure it's Windkloppel, Judge. I checked all my spellings three times over.
Judge Ford reread the private investigator's reports. Mr. McSouthers, it is Winkloppel, but look carefully at the name of the woman in this interview. Bertha Erica Crowe? Sure, I knew her. She and her pa lived in the upstairs flat. We were best friends, almost like sisters, but she was the pretty one with her beautiful complexion and long gold-red hair. She left school to marry a guy named Windkloppel. Haven't seen or heard from her since. She's not in any trouble, is she? Transcript of a taped interview with Sybil Pulaski, November 12th.
Pulaski? The doorman said.
Not just Pulaski, the judge pointed out. Sybil Pulaski. Sam Westing wanted Crowe's childhood friend, Sybil Pulaski, to be one of his heirs. He got Sydell Pulaski instead.
Gee, Judge, I never noticed that. Boy, am I dumb. But what does it mean?
What it means, Mr. McSouthers, is that Sam Westing made his first mistake.
Chapter 20. Confessions. Friday came quickly to the Westing heirs. Too quickly. Time was running out. Turtle skipped school. She was in trouble enough, but she could build her own school and hire her own kind of teachers once she became a millionaire. In spite of having Turtle at her side, Flora Baumbach still stared at the ever-changing, endless tape from the edge of the chair, chewed what remained of her fingernails, and uttered an, "Oh my!" each time WPP went by. At 2 o'clock, Westing Paper Products sold at $52 a share, its highest price in 15 years.
"Now, Baba, sell."
Doug Hu had a legitimate excuse from classes. Tomorrow was the big track meet. He jogged, he sprinted, he ran at full speed, not on the track, but on the trail of Otis Amber, back and forth from the shopping center to Sunset Towers, again and again and again, and...
"Hey, this is a new direction."
Otis Amber parked his delivery bike in front of a rooming house and went inside. Doug waited, hidden in a doorway across the street, and waited. People came and went, but no Otis Amber. Doug jogged up and down the block for 2 hours. Still no sign of Otis Amber. Doug was cold and hungry, but at least his feet didn't hurt anymore. Last night, when he asked Doc Wexler about the blisters, the podiatrist told him to see his father. His father, of all people. But those paper insoles really worked. At 5 o'clock, Otis Amber skipped out of the rooming house, hopped on his bicycle, and returned to Sunset Towers empty-handed. Doug's assignment was all over. Well, almost over. Where was Theo? Theo was being patched up in the hospital emergency room after a slight miscalculation in his solution experiment. Fortunately, no one else was around when the lab blew up.
"You like playing with explosives, kid?"
the bomb squad detective asked. Accidents in high school chemistry were not unusual, but this student lived in Sunset Towers.
"I was experimenting on chemical fertilizers," Theo replied, wincing as the doctor probed his shoulder for a glass shard.
"The first bomb went off in your folks' coffee shop, right? Your mother and father work you pretty hard, don't they?"
"They work harder than I do. Why all the questions? Your captain said the Sunset Towers explosions were just fireworks."
"Sure they were. But bombers have a funny habit of going in for bigger and bigger bangs until they get caught."
Theo had an alibi. He was nowhere near the Wexler apartment the day the third bomb went off. The detective grunted a warning about careless chemistry, but Theo had already learned his lesson.
"Ouch!"
At last, the coffee shop owner himself delivered the up order. The judge came right to the point.
"Mr. Theodorakis, tell me about your relationship with Violet Westing. I have reason to believe a life is in danger, or I would not ask."
It was a question he had expected.
"I grew up in Westingtown, where my father was a factory foreman. Violet Westing and I were what you'd call childhood sweethearts. We planned to get married someday, when I could afford it, but her mother broke us up. She wanted Violet to marry somebody important. The judge had to interrupt.
Her mother? Are you saying it was Mrs. Westing who arranged the marriage, not Sam Westing?
George Theodorakis nodded.
That's right. Sam Westing tried to involve Violet in his business. I guess he hoped she'd take over the paper company one day, but she had her heart set on being a teacher. Besides, Violet didn't have much of a business sense. After that, her father never paid her much attention.
Go on.
The judge held the witness in her stare. The subject was becoming painful, and Mr. Theodorakis faltered several times in the telling.
Mrs. Westing handpicked that politician. Probably figured the guy would end up in the White House and her daughter would be First Lady. But Violet thought he was nothing but a cheap political hack, a cheap crook. Violet was a gentle person, an only child. She couldn't turn against her mother. She couldn't face marrying that guy. I guess she couldn't find any way out, except Mrs. Westing sort of went off her rocker after Violet's death, and I... Well, it was a long time ago.
Thank you, Mr. Theodorakis, the judge said, ending the interrogation. The man had a different life now. Different loves. Different problems. Thank you. You have been a big help.
Sandy was now able to complete the entry.
Theodorakis. Theo Theodorakis, age 17, high school senior, works in family coffee shop, wants to be a writer, seems lonely, can't find anyone to play chess with. Christos Theodorakis, age 15, younger brother of above, confined to wheelchair, disease struck about 4 years ago, knows a lot about birds. Westing connection. Father was childhood sweetheart of Sam Westing's daughter, who looked like Angela Wexler. Mrs. Westing broke up the affair. She wanted daughter to marry somebody else, but Violet Westing killed herself before the wedding. Neither parents of above are heirs.
I hear the new medicine they're trying out on Chris is doing some good,
Sandy reported. But the poor kid needs more help than medicine. He's real smart, you know. Chris could have a real future, be a scientist or a professor even, but it will take a pile of money, more money than his folks could ever make, to put him through college with a handicap like that.
The parents interest me more, the judge said. Why are they not heirs?
Sandy had some thought on that, too.
Maybe Sam Westing didn't want to embarrass George Theodorakis, him being married and all. Or maybe Westing figured he'd be too busy with his coffee shop to stay in the game. Or maybe Westing blamed him for his daughter's death, figuring they should have eloped.
No, if Sam Westing blamed Mr. Theodorakis, he would have made him an heir in this miserable game, the judge replied. There are too many maybes here, which is what Sam Westing planned. We must not allow ourselves to be distracted from the real issue. Which heir did Sam Westing want punished?
The person who hurt him the most? Sandy guessed.
And who would that be?
The person who caused his daughter's death?
Exactly, Mr. McSouthers. Sam Westing plotted against the person he held responsible for his daughter's suicide. The person who forced Violet Westing to marry a man she loathed.
Mrs. Westing?
But that's not possible, Judge. Mrs. Westing is not one of the heirs.
I think she is, Mr. McSouthers. The former wife of Sam Westing must be one of the heirs. Mrs. Westing is the answer, and whoever she is the one we have to protect.
Chapter 21. The Fourth Bomb. The door to apartment 2C opened. Flora Baumbach screamed, and Turtle flung herself on the pile of money they had been counting. It was Theo, not the thief.
Can I borrow your bike for a few hours? It's very important.
Theo was not a runner like Doug, who was fuming about his being so late. He needed the bicycle to follow Otis Amber, right now. Turtle stared at him in stony silence.
I didn't make that sign in the elevator. Besides, you already kicked me for it. Please, Turtle? She still wouldn't answer. Punk kid. I had a long talk with the police today, but I refused to tell them who the bomber was. What's that supposed to mean? What does she think it means? It means that he and everybody else knows that Turtle is the bomber. Never mind. Can I have your bike or not? Why do you want it? Theo ground his teeth. Take it easy. Anger won't help any more than blackmail did. Try being a good guy. I saw Angela in the hospital today. She sends her regards. What's that supposed to mean? You let me have that bike, Turtle Wexler, or else. Turtle did not have to ask what "or else" meant. Police, bomber, Angela. But how did Theo find out? Here. She threw the padlock key across the room and waited for him to rush out before she let go of the money. He's such a nice boy, Flora Baumbach remarked. Sure, Turtle replied, dialing the telephone number of the hospital. Angela Wexler, room 325?
Room 325 is not accepting any calls.
Turtle hung up the phone. If Theo knew, others knew. Angela had set off those fireworks wanting to get caught, but it was different now. Now she was confused. Now she was just plain scared. They could force a confession out of her in no time. The guilt was right there, staring out of those big blue eyes. Maybe they're questioning her now.
Baba, I'm not feeling so good. I think I'll go home to bed.
Weaving through rush hour traffic on Turtle's bike, Theo trailed the bus to a seamy downtown district across the railroad tracks where Crow and Otis got off. Skid Row. The pair wandered through the dimly lit, littered, and stinking street, bending over grimy bums asleep in doorways, raising them to their unsteady feet, and leading the ragtag procession into a decaying storefront. Paint was peeling off the letters on the window, Good Salvation Soup Kitchen. A drunken wreck of a man lurched into Theo, who put a quarter into the filthy outstretched hand, more out of fright than charity. Snatches of hymn singing drifted toward him as the last of the stragglers staggered through the door. Theo crossed the narrow street and pressed his nose against the steamy soup kitchen window. Rows of wretched souls sat hunched on wooden benches. Crow stood before them in her neat black dress, her hands raised toward the crumbling ceiling. Behind her, Otis Amber stirred a boiling mess in a big iron pot. Theo pedaled back to Sunset Towers at a furious pace. Whatever brought Crow and Otis Amber to these lower depths was none of his business. He hated himself for spying. He hated Sam Westing and his dirty money and his dirty game. Theo felt as dirty as the derelicts he spied on. Dirtier. The judge thought they had finished with the heirs.
Not quite, the doorman said. McSouthers. Alexander McSouthers, called Sandy, age 65. Born Edinburgh, Scotland. Immigrated to Wisconsin, age 3. Education, 8th grade. Jobs, millworker, union organizer, prize fighter, doorman. Married, 6 children, 2 grandchildren. Westing connection. Worked in Westing paper plant 20 years. Fired by Sam Westing himself for trying to organize the workers. No pension.
Sandy turned to a blank page, pushed his taped glasses up the broken bridge of his nose, and looked at the judge.
Name?
It had not seemed sporting to investigate one's own partner, but McSouthers was right. This was a Westing game. Of course, she had kept some facts from him about the other heirs, but only because she did not trust his blabbering.
Josie Joe Ford, with a hyphen between Josie and Joe. Age? 42. Education, Columbia, law degree, Harvard.
The judge waited for the doorman to enter the information in his slow, cramped lettering. He had to be meticulous in order to prove he was better than his 8th grade education. It's a pity he had not gone further. He was quite a clever man.
Jobs?
Assistant District Attorney. Judge, Family Court, State Supreme Court, Appellate Division.
A pellet has two P's and two L's. Never married, no children. Westing connection? The judge paused, then spoke so rapidly Sandy had to stop taking notes. My mother was a servant in the Westing household. My father worked for the railroad and was the gardener on his days off.
You mean you lived in the Westing house?
Sandy asked with obvious surprise.
You knew the Westings?
I barely saw Mrs. Westing. Violet was a few years younger than I, doll-like and delicate. She was not allowed to play with other children, especially the skinny, long-legged black daughter of the servants.
Gee, you must have been lonely, Judge, having nobody to play with.
I played with Sam Westing. Chess. Hour after hour I sat staring down at that chessboard. He lectured me, he insulted me, and he won every game. The judge thought of their last game. She had been so excited about taking his queen, only to have the master checkmate her in the next move. Sam Westing had deliberately sacrificed his queen, and she had fallen for it.
Stupid child, you can't have a brain in that frizzy head to make a move like that.
Those were the last words he ever said to her. The judge continued.
I was sent to boarding school when I was 12. My parents visited me at school when they could, but I never set foot in the Westing house again, not until 2 weeks ago.
Your folks must have really worked hard, Sandy said. An education like that costs a fortune.
Sam Westing paid for my education. He saw that I was accepted into the best schools, probably arranged for my first job, perhaps more. I don't know.
That's the first decent thing I've heard about the old man.
Hardly decent, Mr. McSouthers. It was to Sam Westing's advantage to have a judge in his debt. Needless to say, I have excused myself from every case remotely connected with Westing affairs.
You're awfully hard on yourself, Judge, and on him. Maybe Westing paid for your education because you were smart and needy, and you did all the rest by yourself.
This is getting us nowhere, Mr. McSouthers. Just write, Westing connection, education financed by Sam Westing. Debt never repaid. Theo, upset over his Skid Row snooping, took out his anger on the up button, poking it, jabbing it, until the elevator finally made its way down to the lobby. Slowly, the door slid open. He stared down at the sparking, sputtering arsenal, yelled, and belly-flopped to the carpet as rockets whizzed out of the elevator inches above his head. Boom! Boom! A blinding flash of white fire streaked through the lobby, through the open entrance door, and burst into a chrysanthemum of color in the night sky. Then the elevator door closed. The bomber had made one mistake. The last rocket blasted off when the elevator returned to the third floor. Boom. By the time the bomb squad reached the scene, by way of the stairs, the smoke had cleared, but the young girl was still huddled on the hallway floor, tears streaming down her turtle-like face.
"For heaven's sake, say something," her mother said. "Tell me where it hurts."
The pain was too great to be put into words. 5 inches of turtle's braid were badly singed. Grace Wexler attacked the policeman.
"Nothing but a childish prank, you said. Some childish prank. Both my children cruelly injured, almost killed. Maybe now you'll do something, now that it's too late."
Unshaken by the mother's anger, the policeman held up the sign that had been taped to the elevator wall. "The bomber strikes again." On the reverse side was a handwritten composition, "How I Spent My Summer Vacation," by Turtle Wexler. Grace grabbed the theme and shook it at her daughter, who was being rocked in Flora Baumbach's arms.
"Somebody stole this from you, didn't they, Turtle? You couldn't have done such an awful thing. Not to Angela, not to your own sister. Could you, Turtle? Could you?"
"I want to see a lawyer," Turtle replied.
The bomb squad, faced with 6 hours overtime filling out forms and delivering the delinquent to a juvenile detention facility, decided it was best for all concerned to escort the prisoner to apartment 4D and place her in the custody of Judge Ford. Judge Ford put on her black robe and seated herself behind the desk.
Before her stood a downcast child looking very sad and very sorry, not at all like the turtle she knew.
"You surprise me, Turtle Wexler. I thought you were too smart to commit such a dangerous, destructive, and stupid act."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Why did you do it, Turtle? To hurt someone? To get even with someone?"
"No, ma'am."
"Of course not." Turtle kicked shins. She was not the type to bottle up her anger.
"You do understand that a child would not receive as harsh a penalty as an adult would? That there would be no permanent criminal record?"
"Yes, ma'am. I mean, no, ma'am."
She was protecting someone. She had set off the fireworks in the elevator to divert suspicion from the real bomber. But who was the real bomber? Nothing to do but drag it out of her, name by name, starting with the least likely.
"Are you protecting Angela?"
"No!"
The judge was astounded by the excited response. Angela could not be the bomber. Not that sweet, pretty thing. Thing? Is that how she regarded that young woman? As a thing? And what had she ever said to her except,
"I hear you're getting married, Angela"?
Or, "How pretty you look, Angela"?
Had anyone asked about her ideas, her hopes, her plans? If I had been treated like that, I'd have used dynamite, not fireworks. No, I would have just walked out and kept right on going. But Angela was different.
"What a senseless thing to do," the judge said aloud.
"Yes, ma'am."
Turtle stared down at the carpet, wondering if she had given Angela away. Judge Ford rose and placed an arm around Turtle's bony shoulders. She had never wished for a sister until this moment.
"Turtle, will you give me your word that you will never play with fireworks again?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"While we're at it, do you have anything else to confess?"
"Yes, ma'am. I was in the Westing house the night Mr. Westing died."
"Good Lord, child, sit down and tell me."
Turtle began with the purple waves story, went on to the whisperings, the bedded down corpse, the dropped peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and her mother's cross, and ended with the $24 she had won.
"Did either you or Doug Who call the police?"
"No, ma'am. We were too scared. We just ran. Is that a crime?"
The judge said it was a criminal offense to conceal a murder.
"But Mr. Westing didn't look murdered," Turtle argued. "He looked asleep, like he did in the coffin. He looked like a wax dummy."
"A wax dummy?"
Now Turtle was the one surprised by the excited response. The judge thinks it might have been a real wax dummy, not a corpse at all. Then what happened to Sam Westing? The judge regained her composure.
"Not reporting a dead body is a violation of the health code, but I wouldn't worry about it. Is there anything else, Turtle?"
"Yes, ma'am,"
Turtle replied, glancing at the portable bar.
"Could I have a little bourbon?"
"What?"
"Just a little. On a piece of cotton to put in my cavity. My tooth hurts something awful."
Relieved at not having a juvenile alcoholic on her hands, Judge Ford prepared the home remedy.
"Is that better? Good. You may go home now."
Home meant going to Baba. Baba loved her no matter what, and Turtle didn't care if the others thought she was the bomber. Except Sandy. He was walking toward her right now, walking his bouncy walk, but not smiling. Sandy is disappointed in her. He thinks she hurt her own sister. He doesn't want to be friends anymore.
"How's my girl?"
Sandy said, cupping his hand under her chin and lifting her head.
"Phew! Hitting the bottle again?"
"It's just bourbon on cotton for my toothache."
"Yeah, I've heard that one before."
"Honest, Hangy?"
Turtle was pointing inside her wide-open mouth. The doorman peered in.
"Wow, that's some cavity. It looks like the Grand Canyon. Tomorrow morning, you're going to see my dentist. No back talk. He's very gentle. You won't feel a thing. Promise you'll go?"
Turtle nodded. Sandy smiled.
Good. Then down to business. My wife's having a birthday tomorrow. I thought one of your gorgeous striped candles would make a swell present.
There's only one candle left, Turtle replied. It's the best of the lot. 6 super colors. I spent a lot of time making it. That's why I wouldn't part with it. But since it's for your wife's birthday, Sandy, I'll let you have it for only $5. And I won't charge you sales tax.
Try not to stick your fanny out so far, Angela said from her chair. Now that Seidel Pulaski depended on crutches, she lurched clumsily, hobbled by old habits.
Just keep reading those clues, the secretary straightened, shoulders back, stomach in, until her next step.
With their telephone switched off, and contagious disease added to the no visitors sign, the bomb victims had privacy at last. Seidel had twice read the entire will aloud. Now Angela, her hands unbandaged, was reshuffling the collected clues.
Grains, spacious, grace, good, hood, with, beautiful, majesties, from, thy, purple, waves, on, no, mountain.
Again, Seidel ordered. Change them around and read either the word on or the word no. Both together are confusing.
Good, spacious, grains, with, grace, on, thy, purple, mountain, hood, waves, from, majesties, beautiful.
Shh!
Someone was at the door. Angela picked up the note that was slipped underneath.
My darling Angela, I guess the sign on the door means I should stay away too. I understand. We both need time to think things over. I'll wait. I love you. Denton.
What does it say? What does it say?
Seidel pressed, but Angela read only the postscript aloud.
P.S. You have another admirer. Chris wants to give you and Ms. Pulaski one of our clues.
Flora Baumbach has seen it too. The word is plane.
Like an airplane? Seidel asked.
No, plane, like ordinary. Like the wide open plains.
Plains. Grains. Quick, Angela, read the clues again. Good, hood, from, spacious, plain, grains, on, with, beautiful, waves, grace, thy, purple, mountain, majesties.
That's it, Angela. We got it. We got it.
Seidel could barely control her excitement.
The will said, sing in praise of this generous land. The will said, may God thy gold refine. America, Angela, America! Purple mountain majesties, Angela! Whoopee!
Fortunately, Seidel Pulaski was close to the bed when she threw her crutches in the air. Chapter 22. Losers, Winners. Saturday morning, a new message was posted in the elevator.
I, Turtle Wexler, confess to those 4 bombs. I'm sorry, it was a dumb thing to do, and I won't do it again. But I am not the burglar, and I never murdered anybody, ever. Your friend, Turtle. P.S. To make up for scaring you, I will treat everybody here to an exquisite Chinese cuisine dinner when I win the inheritance.
Poor Grace, Mr. Hu said. One daughter almost killed, the other one a bomber. Smart aleck kid. First she blows up my kitchen, then she advertises my cuisine. Win the inheritance. Ha! Maybe I'm lucky my son is a dumb jock.
Boom!
Madam Hu said happily. She knew where they were going. Always on the day when Doug ate 6 eggs for breakfast, he ran around and around a big track, and people clapped and gave him a shiny medal. Doug was so proud of his medals. She would never take them. Not even the gold one, not even if it took her 2 more years to pay to go back to China. No, she would never take Doug's medals, and she would never sell that wonderful clock with the mouse who wears gloves and points to the time.
You must be out of your mind, Jake Wexler. Go to a track meet with all those people pointing at me, snickering, saying, look, there she is, the mother of Cain and Abel.
I'm not even sure I have the nerve to show my face at the Westinghouse tonight.
Come on, Grace, it'll do you good,
the podiatrist urged his reluctant wife down the third floor hall.
Stop thinking about yourself for a change. Think how poor Turtle must feel.
Don't ever mention that child to me again. Not after what she did to Angela. I never told you this, Jake, but I've always had a sinking sensation that the hospital mixed up the babies when Turtle was born.
It's no wonder she wanted to blow us all up.
Grace's despair exploded in anger.
Oh, I get it. You're putting the blame on me. If you had given her a good talking to about kicking people when I asked, she might not have ended up a common criminal.
Whatever became of that fun-loving woman I married? What was her name? Gracie Windkloppel?
Grace quickly looked around to see if anyone had overheard that ugly name, but they were in the elevator, alone.
Oh, I know what people think, she complained. Poor Jake Wexler, good guy, everybody's friend, married to that uppity would-be decorator. Well, Angela's not going to have to scrimp and save to make ends meet. She's going to marry a real doctor. I'll see to that.
Sure you will, Grace. You'll see that Angela doesn't marry a loser like her father.
A real doctor, she says. A podiatrist is a real doctor. Well, it is these days, but when he went to school, it was different. He could have gone back, taken more courses, but he was married by then, a father. Oh, who's he kidding? Gracie's right. He is a loser. Next, she'll mention having to give up her family because she married a Jew. No, she never brings that up. Grace, with all her faults, would never do that. The elevator door opened to the lobby. Grace turned to her silent, sad-eyed husband, the loser.
Oh, Jake, what's happening to us? What's happening to me? Maybe they're right. Maybe I'm not a nice person.
Jake pressed the closed door button and took his sobbing wife into his arms.
It's all right, Gracie. We're going home.
The doors opened on the second floor.
Mom, what's the matter with her, Daddy? She's crying. Gee, Mom, I'm sorry. It was just a few fireworks.
If her mother ever found out who the real bomber was, she'd really go to pieces. Turtle looked even more like a turtle today, with her sad little face peering out of the kerchief tied under her small chin.
Let go of the door, Turtle, Jake said, and have a good time at the track meet. You too, Mrs. Bombach.
Track meet? They weren't going to a track meet, and they sure were not going to have a good time. Grace was still sobbing on Jake's shoulder as he led her into their apartment.
Mother? What's the matter? What's wrong with her, Dad?
Nothing, Angela. Your mother's just having a good cry. Why don't you and Ms. Pulaski leave us alone for a while?
Come, Angela,
Seidel said, prodding her with the tip of one of her mismatched crutches.
We have some painting to do.
Angela looked back at the embracing couple. Her father's face was buried in her weeping mother's tousled hair. They had not asked how she got home from the hospital. By taxi. They had not asked if she was still in pain. Not much. They had not even peeked under the bandage to see if a scar was forming on her cheek. There was. Angela was on her own. Well, that's what she wanted, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it was.
She uttered a short laugh, and her hand flew up to the pain in her face.
Do I look funny or something?
No, I wasn't laughing at you, Seidel. I'd never laugh at you. It's just that, suddenly, everything seemed all right.
It's all right,
her partner replied, unlocking the four locks on her apartment door.
Tonight's the night. We're going to win it all.
Were they? The will said, look for a name. They had a song, not a name.
Oh, beautiful four spacious skies, Seidel began to sing. Four purple waves of grain.
Not purple, Angela corrected her. Amber. For amber waves of grain.
Amber.
Judge Ford paced the floor. Tonight, Sam Westing would wreak his revenge unless she could prevent it. If she was right, the person in danger was the former Mrs. Westing. And if Turtle was right about the wax dummy, Sam Westing himself might be there to watch the fun. There was a knock on her door. The judge was surprised to see Denton Deer, even more surprised when he wheeled Chris Theodorakis into her apartment.
"Hello, Judge. Everybody else in the building is going to the track meet, it seems. I passed Sandy on the way out, and he said you wouldn't mind having Chris for part of the afternoon. I've got to get back to the hospital."
"Hello, Judge Ford."
Chris held out a steady hand, which the judge shook.
"You're looking well, Chris. The medicine helped a lot."
"It's a big step forward," the intern said. "Wrong word. The kid may never leave that wheelchair. An even more effective medication is now in the developmental stage." That really sounded pompous.
"Well, so long, Chris. See you tonight. Thanks, Judge."
"He knows lots of big words," Chris said.
"Yes, he certainly does," Judge Ford replied. What was she going to do with this boy here? She had so much to think about, so much to plan.
"You can work. I'll birdwatch," Chris offered, wheeling to the window, his binoculars banging against his thin chest.
"Good idea." The judge returned to her desk to study the newspaper clippings. Mrs. Westing, a tall, thin woman. She may no longer be thin, but she would still be tall, about 60 years old. If Sam Westing's former wife was one of the heirs, she had to be Crow.
"Look!"
Chris shouted, startling the judge into dropping her files to the floor. She rushed to his side, thinking he needed help.
"Look up there, Judge. Isn't it beautiful?
High in the fall sky, a V of geese was flying south. Yes, it was a beautiful sight.
"Those are geese," the judge explained. "Canada goose. Branta canadensis,"
Chris replied. The judge was impressed, but she had work to do. Stooping to gather the dropped clippings, she was confronted by the face of Sam Westing. The photograph had been taken 15 years ago. Those piercing eyes, the Van Dyke beard, that short beaked nose, like a turtle's. The wax dummy in the coffin had been molded in the former image of Sam Westing as he had looked 15 years ago. Not as he looked now. She searched the folder. No recent photographs, no hospital records, no death certificate. Just the accident report from the State Highway Police. Dr. Sidney Sykes suffered a crushed leg, and Samuel W. Westing had severe facial injuries. Facial injuries. It was the face that had disappeared 15 years ago, not the man. Westing had a different face, a face remodeled by plastic surgery, a different face and a different name. Now what? Her gaze rested on her charge at the window. Feeling her eyes, Chris turned around. The boy has a nice smile.
"I hope you're better at filling cavities than making false teeth," Turtle said, gripping the arms of the dentist's chair. In a glass cabinet against the wall, three rows of dentures grinned at her with crooked teeth, overlapping teeth, notched teeth.
"Those faults are what make the dentures look real," the dentist explained. "Nothing in nature is quite perfect, you know. Now, open your mouth wide. Wider."
"Ow!"
Turtle screamed before the probe touched tooth.
"Just relax, young lady. I'll tell you when to say ow."
Turtle tried to think about other things. False teeth. Buck teeth. That rotten buck-toothed Barney Northrop stopped by this morning to tell the Wexlers they would have to pay for all the damage done by the bombs. Barney Northrop had called her parents irresponsible and had called her something worse. Much worse. He sure was surprised by that kick. It was her hardest one ever.
"Now you can say ow."
The dentist unclipped the towel from her shoulder. Turtle passed her tongue over the drilled tooth. She had not felt a thing. But the real pain was yet to come.
Flora Baumbach was taking her to the beauty parlor to have her singed hair cut off. College teams from 5 states competed in the first indoor track meet of the season, but the big event, the mile run, was won by a high school senior.
"That's my boy! That's my Doug!"
Mr. Hu shouted, one voice among thousands cheering the youngster on his victory lap. Cameras flashed as Doug posed, smiling broadly, index fingers high in the air.
"I owe it all to my dad,"
he told reporters, and cameras flashed again as Doug flung an arm around the proud Mr. Hu.
"Just wait until the next Olympics," the inventor thought. "With Doug's feet and my inner soles, he'll run them to the ground."
Later that evening, Madam Hu, chattering in unintelligible Chinese, made it known that she wanted Doug to wear his prize to the Westinghouse. Standing on tiptoe, she placed the ribbon over his bent head and patted the shiny gold medal in place on his chest.
"Good boy," she said in English.
A saddened Sandy returned to apartment 4D.
"Hi, Chris. Did you talk to him, Judge?"
"Talk to whom?"
"Barney Northrop. He was waiting at the front door when I got back from the track meet, mad as a wet cat. Said he had lots of complaints about me. Never being on duty, drinking on the job, lies like that. He fired me right on the spot. I told him you wanted to see him, figuring you might put in a good word so he'd let me stay on."
"No, Mr. McSuthers, I'm sorry, but I haven't seen Barney Northrop since I rented this apartment." Barney Northrop. Was that Westing's disguise? False buck teeth, slick black wig, pasted-on mustache?
"Well, it's not the first time I got fired for no cause."
The dejected doorman blew his nose loudly in a Westing man-sized hanky.
"Hey, Chris, bet you don't know the Latin name of the red-headed woodpecker."
That was a hard one. Chris had to say Melanerpes erythrocephalus very slowly.
"Some smart kid, hey, Judge? Chris, the judge and I have a little business to discuss. Excuse us for a minute."
Judge Ford joined the doorman in the kitchen.
"Our game plan is this, Mr. McSuthers. We give no answer. No answer at all. Our duty is to protect Westing's ex-wife."
"Crow?"
Sandy guessed.
"That's right." "There's something else that's been bothering me, Judge. I know it sounds crazy, but, well, I found out Otis Amber doesn't live in the grocer's basement. And he's not as dumb as he pretends. He's a snoop and a troublemaker, and I don't think he is who he says he is."
"And who do you think Otis Amber is?" the judge asked.
"Sam Westing."
Judge Ford leaned against the sink and pressed her head against the cabinet. If Sandy was correct, she had played right into the man's hands, Sam Westing's hands.
"Come on, Crow, you always like to get there early to open the door for people."
Crow had stopped in the middle of the steep road to stare up at the Westinghouse.
"I've got a funny feeling that something evil is waiting for me up there, Otis. It's a bad house, full of misery and sin. He's still there, you know."
"Sam Westing is dead and buried. Come on, if we don't go, we gotta give the money back, and we already spent it on the soup kitchen."
"I feel his presence, Otis. He's looking for a murderer, Violet's murderer."
"Stop scaring yourself with crazy notions. You sound like you're on the bottle again."
Crow strode ahead.
I didn't mean that, Crow. Honest, look up there at that moon. Isn't it romantic?"
"Somebody's in real danger, Otis. And I think it's me."
Chapter 23. Strange Answers. Lawyer Plum was there, and one pair of heirs when Otis Amber danced into the game room.
"The turtle's lost its tail, I see."
Turtle slumped low in her chair. Flora Baumbach thought the short, sleek haircut was adorable, especially the way it swept forward over her little chin. But Turtle did not want to look adorable.
She wanted to look mean. The dressmaker fumbled past the wad of money in her handbag.
Here, Alice, I thought you might like to see this.
Turtle glanced at the old snapshot. It's Baba, all right, except younger. Same dumb smile. Suddenly, she sat upright.
That's my daughter, Rosalie, Flora Baumbach said. She must have been 9 or 10 when that picture was taken.
Rosalie was squat and square and squinty. Her protruding tongue was too large for her mouth, her head lolled to one side.
I think I would have liked her, Baba, Turtle said. Rosalie looks like she was a very happy person. She must have been nice to have around.
Thump, thump. Thump, thump.
Here come the victims,
Seidel Pulaski announced. Angela greeted her sister with a wave of her crimson-streaked, healing hand. Turtle had convinced her not to confess. It would mean a criminal record. It would kill their mother. And no one would believe her anyhow.
I like your haircut.
Thanks, Turtle replied. Now Angela had to love her forever. Most of the heirs had to comment on Turtle's hair.
You look like a real businesswoman, Sandy said.
Well, that's an improvement, Denton Deer said.
You look nice,
Chris said. Only Theo, bent over the chessboard, said nothing. White had moved the king's bishop since the last meeting. It was his move. At last, the stairs turned from Turtle's hair to a more surprising sight. Judge Ford strode in as regally as an African princess, her noble head swathed in a turban, her tall body draped in yards of hand-printed cloth. She slipped a note to Denton Deer, then sailed to her place at table 4. Goggle-eyed Otis Amber was speechless. They all were, except for Sandy.
Gee, that's a nifty outfit, Judge. Is that what you call ethnic?
The judge did not reply. Applaud, the local hero has arrived. Doug raised his arms, pointing his index fingers to the flaking gilt ceiling in the I'm number one sign, and acknowledged the clapping with a victory lap around the room.
He'll come to Wexler's,
Mr. Who remarked, seating his puzzled wife at table 1. Turtle exchanged an anxious glance with Angela. The last time they saw their mother, she was crying her head off. Now the tears were gone from her bleary eyes, but she was staggering, giggling. Her hair was a mess.
Sorry we're late, Jake apologized. We lost track of time.
They had been clinking wine glasses in a small cafe, the cafe they used to go to before they were married, toasting good times. They had had many good times together, many good memories shared, it seems. 3 big wine bottles full. Happy Grace waved at the heirs. She felt so wonderful, so overflowing with love for Jake, for everybody.
Hi, Mom,
Turtle called. Grace blinked at a young, short-haired girl.
Who's that?
Jake greeted his partner with a,
How are you this fine day?
Doug Wynn,
replied Madam Who. Having opened the door to the last of the heirs, a tense and troubled crow took her seat next to Otis Amber. Ghost threatened. She waited for the unseen.
Hey, lawyer, can we open these?
Otis Amber shouted, waving an envelope. A similar envelope lay on each table. His forehead creased with uncertainty. Ed Plum fumbled through his papers.
I guess so,
was his opinion. Cheers erupted as the heirs withdrew the checks. Again, Judge Ford signed her name to the $10,000 check and handed it to the doorman.
Here you are, Mr. McSuthers. This should tide you over until you find another job.
Sandy's heartfelt thanks were muffled by Seidel Pulaski's loud,
Shh!
Shh!
Grace Wexler mimicked. Then she dropped her head into her crossed arms on the table and fell asleep to the sound of the lawyer's throat-clearing coughs.
12th. Welcome again to the Westinghouse. By now you have received a second check for $10,000. Before the day is done, you may have won more, much more. Table by table, each pair will be called to give one, and only one, answer. The lawyer will record your response in case of a dispute. He does not know the answer. It is up to you. 1. Madam Sun Lin Hu, cook. Jake Wexler, bookie.
Bookie? He really must have been distracted when he signed that receipt. Jake studied the five clues on the table. Of America and God above. Even knowing his wife's clues didn't help. He'd have to gamble on a long shot.
Say something,
he said to his partner.
Boom,
said Madam Hu. Ed Plum wrote, Table 1. Boom.
2. Flora Bombach, dressmaker. Turtle Wexler, financier.
Turtle read a prepared statement.
In spite of the fact that the stock market dropped 30 points since we received our $10,000, we have increased our capital to $11,587.50, an appreciation of 27.8% calculated on an annual basis.
Flora Bombach slapped a wad of bills on the table and two clinking quarters.
In cash, she said.
Ed Plum asked them to repeat their answer.
Table 2's answer is $11,587.50.
Sandy applauded. Turtle took a bow.
3. Christos Theodorakis, ornithologist. D. Denton Deere, intern.
Ornithologist?
His brother must have given him that fancy title when he filled in the receipt.
Maybe he would become an ornithologist someday.
He was a lucky person, getting that medicine at all. He didn't want to accuse anybody. Not Judge Ford, apartment 4D. Not Otis, Grain, Amber. Not the limper. Just about everybody limped at one time or other. Today, Sandy was limping.
I think Mr. Westing is a good man, Chris said aloud. I think his last wish was to do good deeds. He gave me a partner who helped me. He gave everybody the perfect partner to make friends.
What is Table 3's answer?
The lawyer asked. Denton Deere replied,
Our answer is, Mr. Westing was a good man.
4. J.J. Ford, Judge, Alexander McSouthers, fired.
We don't have an answer.
The ex-doorman responded as planned. The judge looked at Table 3. Denton Deere, her note in his hand, shook his head, which meant, no, Otis Amber has not had plastic surgery done on his face. The judge turned to Table 6. Otis Amber could not be Sam Westing. She was right to have trusted him. But Crow is expecting something to happen. Crow knows she is the answer. She knows she is the one.
5. Grace Windkloppel Wexler, restaurateur. James Hu, inventor.
Grace raised her head.
Did someone say Windkloppel?
Never mind Windkloppel, it's our turn, Hu snarled. The lawyer got names and positions all fouled up, and I've got a drunk for a partner.
He prodded Grace to her feet. Faces were swirling. The floor was swaying. Grace grabbed the edge of the floating table and gave her answer in a thick, slurred voice.
The newly decorated restaurant, Who's On First, the Eatery of Athletes, will hold its grand reopening on Sunday. Specialty of the day, fruited sea bass on purple waves.
Grace sat down where the chair wasn't. Turtle gasped. Angela looked away. The heirs tittered as Jake helped his wife up from the floor.
What is Table 5's answer, please?
The lawyer pressed.
Ed Plum, said Mr. Hu.
Yes, sir.
That's our answer, Ed Plum.
Oh. 6. Bertha Erica Crow, mother. Otis Amber, deliverer.
Mother? Did
I write, Mother?
Crow mumbled.
Is that your answer?
Ed Plum asked.
I don't know, Otis Amber replied.
Is Mother our answer, Crow?
He could have sworn she had again signed the receipt, Good Salvation Soup Kitchen. Crow repeated,
Mother.
And that's what the lawyer wrote down.
7. Doug Who, Champ, Theo Theodorakis, Writer.
Their clues, a chemical formula for an explosive, and the letters O-T-I-S. Doug, basking in glory, didn't care. Theo stood, turned to the man he was about to accuse, and saw the scene in the soup kitchen, saw Otis Amber cooking soup for the dirty, hungry men.
No answer, Theo said, sitting down.
8. Seidel Pulaski, victim. Angela Wexler, person.
Seidel was dressed for the occasion in red and white stripes, leaning on crutches decorated with white stars on a field of blue to match the cast on her ankle. She hummed into a pitch pipe and began to sing one note above the pitch she played.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
What a spectacle she made, her wide rear end sticking out, singing in that tuneless, nasal voice. The derisive smiles soon faded as, pair by pair, the heirs heard their code words sung.
America, America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Such a beautiful song,
Grace Wexler slurred, but the others sat in somber silence. Even Turtle thought Table 8 had won.
What is your answer?
Ed Plum asked.
Our answer,
Seidel Pulaski announced with certainty,
is Otis Amber.
The heirs listened to the lawyer read the next document, but their eyes stayed fixed on Table 8's answer. Otis Amber.
13th. Okay, folks, there will be a short break before the big winner is announced. Bertha Erica Crow, please rise and go to the kitchen for the refreshments.
Dazed with fear, Crow rose. The 13th section. 13 was an unlucky number. Judge Ford told Sandy to follow her.
Hey, Crow, old pal, do me a favor and fill this for me, he said, handing her his flask as they left through the door. I'll go on the wagon starting tomorrow, promise.
Angela left the room too, concerned over Crow's trance-like state. Turtle followed Angela to make sure she didn't end up in the fireworks room again. The judge remained seated, watching the remaining heirs, who were watching Otis Amber. The delivery boy had had enough of their suspicions. He swept a pointed finger across their range, imitating the sound of a machine gun.
Rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat.
Crow and Angela came back with two large trays. Turtle returned empty-handed, puzzled, but much relieved. The judge joined Denton Deer and Chris at Table 3, bringing a plate of small cakes with her.
None of the heirs have had plastic surgery, as far as I can tell, the intern remarked. But your partner sure could have used some.
The judge studied Sandy McSouther's prize fighter's face as he leaned against the open doorway. Their eyes met, and he lifted his flask in salute.
Anybody want a drink?
Sure,
Grace Wexler replied with a giggle, but Jake gave her a cup of strong black coffee instead.
We must keep our wits about us, Mr. McSouthers, Judge Ford said.